right, everybody. Microphone now on. Thank you all for coming to the YA panel, Space.
Space.
That was a fade out. I'm Amy Patti. I am a professor teaching in the School of Library and Information Science and the Programs in Children's Literature at Simmons College, and I'm going to be the panel moderator. And we'll be talking today to Tilly Walden, Andrew Smith, and Salsha Osberg. And so we thought we would organize this panel in a way that would allow each person to kind of do a little get to know you with you all, talk a little bit about their book. I'll start with a couple of questions, and then at the end of the panel, there'll be a chance for all of you all to ask some questions. Then afterwards, these folks are going to be signing their books. I'm not exactly sure where. Oh, right outside. So if you all, when we're all done, if you all wouldn't mind giving these folks a little bit of space to just walk out and get themselves set up, then you all can line up, and then we'll have a chance for the book signing and stuff. So sound like a plan? All right. So somebody gave a thumbs up, so that was really good. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give like just a very high-level introduction to these folks. And then we're going to play which one, sort of where I present us with a choice of two things. And you have to choose which one you prefer.
It's like, would you rather?
It is like, would you rather, but not with the sexual component. And you could add that in. But
there are children here.
Yeah. So I will give you a choice of two things, and then you give me your choice, and then you have one sentence, why. So that sentence will start out with because blah, 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 but like just one short sentence. So first, I know, aren't you excited? I came up with all of these over the past couple of weeks. They're exciting. Okay, so let me just introduce our esteemed panel. So starting from the very end, but not the end, it's the beginning, is Salsha Osberg. Now, some of you all might know Salsha from Book Chat and A Book Utopia, which are two presences or shows that are available for viewing on YouTube, where Salsha talks a lot about books they've read, about book hauls, and about bibliophilia in general. Now, Salsha is here to talk about Zenith, the first book in the Andromeda, am I saying
that?
You
got it right.
In the Andromeda saga, that was written with co-author Lindsay Cummins. Now, here beside me, we have Tilly Walden, who is a cartoonist and an illustrator, and who writes webcomics and graphic novels that explore personal experiences and girlhood. Now, Tilly is going to be talking about On a Sunbeam, which was first serialized as a webcomic, and some of you all might have read that on Tilly's website. And here's an interesting fact. Tilly is one of the youngest people to have won an Eisner Award. Mm-hmm. And supposedly.
That's cool.
Okay, I'm not sure who the absolute youngest person was, but you were supposedly one of the youngest people for spinning. And finally, I don't want you to see my would you rather. Finally, we have in the middle Andrew Smith, who is an author of numerous young adult novels, though he has just ventured into the middle grade with his novel Size of the Truth. His YA novels include the Prince Honor and Boston Globe Hornbook Award winner Grasshopper Jungle, and he's going to be talking today about Rabbit and Robot, which involves two young people stranded in space with increasingly sentient robots. So, ready for would you rather or mm-hmm. which one?
I don't think we have a choice.
Okay, wow. All right, so we're going to start with a pretty easy one, or at least I think it's a pretty easy one. So Star Wars or Star Trek?
I'm not taking that one. You guys go first.
This is so controversial because I'm a sci-fi writer, but I didn't watch Star Wars until last year, and I don't think I've ever seen Star Trek in its entirety. So if I would actually have to pick one, I would pick Star Wars just because I have seen 2.5 of those movies. I fell asleep in the last one, and I still need to finish it, and it's been a year. So can somebody tweet me later today and say, Salsha finished the Star Wars saga, and then go to the prequels and then watch the newer ones, because I need somebody to tell me to do that.
I like that honest answer.
Yeah, very honest.
I haven't seen either.
Okay, I feel way better.
So I don't I do not know what to say.
I think there might be a generational divide here that these are evincing.
I've seen Buffy.
Oh, okay.
Me too.
There you go.
It's great.
So the theme is space. So these would you rathers are space related. So yeah. Got one?
Star Trek, because I'm just so old. And now I feel really old. What's Buffy?
Buffy
I'm
the
kidding.
Vampire?
I'm
I was
kidding.
Like, oh my gosh, are you kidding? It's like, excuse me?
My heart stopped a little bit there.
I have that effect.
Okay, so here's this one's for the science nerds out there in the audience. Yuri Gagarin, first person in space, or Neil Armstrong, first person on the moon?
I'm going to go off the board and pick Laika.
Oh my gosh! Oh,
that's a good one.
Oh, that graphic novel.
Wait, how am I picking which person?
Yeah.
What about the person am I picking?
Preference, interest.
What if I have no interest in them?
You could go off the board.
I mean, I'll pick Neil Armstrong.
Yeah.
Sure.
All right, why not?
Because
an American hero.
Yeah, an American hero. There we go. Mm-hmm.
I'll pick Neil, too, because everybody knows his name.
Yeah.
But I want to also pick, in the future, who's going to be the first person to step foot on Mars. Because it's coming up, guys, and I want to see it happen.
Oh, so scary.
Oh, and I love it. I'm not scared of any of that stuff. Like, you could send me up in a spaceship, and I'll be, like, taking little Snapchats, sending them to everybody, and be like, I'm in space.
Will Snapchat work in space?
It better. There's satellites up there. Oh. Not really.
Solid.
AT&T, can I get an international phone plan for space?
It'll be either really cheap or really expensive.
Probably really expensive.
All right. HAL, the sentient, possibly, robot from 2001, or a Roomba?
A Roomba, because I really need to clean my apartment.
Mm. HAL all the way.
Wait, what's your because?
Because Arthur C. Clarke.
A Roomba, because I have dogs that shed.
Ah. Wow, that was an easy one. Okay, Spock or Kirk? Which might not work, given... Surely, you recognize the figures of Captain Kirk and Dr. Spock?
I'll pick the doctor.
Oh, the good doctor?
Mm-hmm.
Well, and Dr. Spock was played by Leonard Nimoy, who is actually a local, or was a local, rest in peace, from Brooklyn.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, there you go.
Spock. Because those few times when he'd go insane and have emotions and stuff were just classic.
Spock, because I know a little bit more about him than I know the other dude.
Nice.
I'm not doing myself any favors as a sci-fi writer right now.
Well, I think I made a lot of generic assumptions, so apologies all around. Now, here's the last one, and I hope you will take it in the spirit in which it's intended. Venus or Uranus?
Ooh.
Venus. Just because Venus was written about in Kurt Vonnegut's The Sirens of Titan, I think.
Mm. I was going to go off the board and just say Planet X, because it does exist. But Uranus, because I'm a child.
I still miss Pluto.
Oh.
I know.
I think it's back now.
Is it?
I think
then
so.
Pluto.
Ooh, I like the goblin. It was just discovered. It's another dwarf planet outside of our solar system, I believe. I need to do more research on it, but it's fascinating, and it's called the goblin. So who wouldn't love that? Sorry, Pluto. Oh.
Well, that's all the would you rathers I have. I had some
Those
other...
Those were hard.
Were they?
A little bit.
I had thought of some actually harder ones. Anyway, why don't we go, now that we know these people very, very well, why don't we hear a little bit about the books that they're going to be talking about? So if you all don't mind, maybe we can just go straight down the line, mm-hmm. and each of you can talk a little bit about your space-related or adjacent writing and perhaps your most recent work.
Sure. I'll explain my book, On a Sunbeam, by telling you why I made a sci-fi book when I don't really like sci-fi and have not ever read or seen anything sci-fi related. It's because I made a book called Spinning, which is a graphic memoir about my 12 years as a competitive figure skater and coming out and trying to be a lesbian in this very weird sport. And basically, after making Spinning, I was really done with reality. I was a little sick of, like, the hardcore... homophobia and intensity of
the world I was living in. And so I was like, what is something I could do that would take me very far away from the ice rink and from Texas and from my family? And I was like, oh, outer space, of course. So I made a sci-fi comic, and it's not sci-fi because there's no science in it. They breathe. There's trees everywhere. And the spaceships are fish because I don't know how to draw spaceships, but I know how to draw fish. And so On a Sunbeam is just about these women and queer people who have basically found this family and are you know, I would say they're on an adventure, but the adventure is pretty mild. What's the heart of the story is about their relationships and, you know, finding out who they are. I like space as a backdrop for personal stories. I wasn't interested in, like, an explosion or science or a robot. I was like, oh, what happens when you fall in love with someone and then you meet them again and you don't love them but you still want to know them? That interests me. And I also like drawing planets, so, like, having that moment with a planet behind you. And that's On a Sunbeam.
Great.
That's my pitch.
Thank you.
Okay, well, I my whole life, ever since I was probably 3 or 4 years old, I always felt like the universe was trying to send me signals, and I don't know how well I interpret them. The story that I was telling when we were off mic, I'm still trying to figure out what the universe was telling me there. But so a few years ago, I found myself trapped in this gigantic machine with all these insane robots that began eating each other. And then I realized that I wasn't trapped in a giant machine in space with robots that were eating each other, that it was just Twitter. And so I figured the universe was trying to tell me something. And so really this book, although it's about being trapped in a gigantic machine in space with robots who are eating each other, is really about Twitter. And and there was this other thing that happened, too. When the book came out 2 weeks ago, somebody posted on Twitter that they thought the acknowledgments were the best thing they'd ever read in their life. I don't know why, but I'm going to read you the acknowledgments. They're very short. About 3 years ago, when I was traveling on a book tour, my cell phone broke. How can anyone survive without this machine? I was 3,000 miles from home and would be gone for more than a week before popping back into Southern California. I figured me not having a phone would worry my family, but my choices for where I could go to replace it, the phone, not my family, were limited to whatever was within walking distance from my hotel. So I ended up getting a new phone, one with a number on it, that leads people to believe that I live 3,000 miles away from where I actually live, which is kind of cool. The other thing about the phone is that its number used to belong to two different people I do not know, but who I get calls and text messages for all the time. One of those people is named Billy Hinman. Billy Hinman is one of the main characters in this book. I started getting so many phone calls and messages for Billy Hinman while writing this book in 2015 that I decided to make him a character in Rabbit and Robot. I got a phone call for Billy about 3 days ago, as a matter of fact. So I figured it has to be some kind of sign. Also, Billy, I think you owe a lot of people a lot of money. On the bright side, Billy, you got trapped inside one of my books. One of these days, maybe our paths will cross. We'll go out for drinks, maybe get tattoos together. At the very least, we'll take a selfie and trap the ultimate expression of what we've become as human beings on a phone that is forever haunted by your life. So thank you, Billy Hinman, for coming to me as you did. The other guy who's trapped inside my phone is a guy named Hassan al-Mahmoudi, and I get text messages sometimes from Saudi Arabia for him, and also from the guys that he plays soccer with, and they're all going to beat him up now because I keep telling them how horribly they play soccer. But he's not in this book. But the book is about these two friends, Billy and his friend Cager. And imagine this. It's a world in which the economic diversity of the United States is gone, so kids can only become one of two things, a rabbit or a robot. Those are kind of slang terms. And wealth is concentrated so tightly into the hands of just about five people only. And Billy and Cager happen to be children of these super ultra-wealthy people. Also, education has been taken over by businesses, thanks Betsy DeVos, And some people think this book is written, you know, way in the future. I think it's written probably like 3 months from now. But Billy and Cager end up on this cruise ship that's in outer space going around the moon, and they're alone, but the spaceship is staffed with thousands of robots that include things like talking giraffes and monkeys from Boston. The robots get infected with a virus, and they start to eat each other. And the book is really just an examination of, you know, what it is to be a human being, what's the difference between ourselves and machines. Because I found myself at my age wondering about, you know, why it is that technology was given to us with this promise that it's going to bring us together as human beings. And I'm just seeing like these calluses that get built between people, and there's so much of a disconnect, like the madness of social media. That it just kind of perplexes me, and I wonder where we're going. The epigram at the beginning of the book is a quote from Eric Fromm, and it says, "Education produces machines which act like men, and men who act like machines." And that's really what the book is all about. And Billy. He might even be in the audience one of these days.
That'll be a plot twist. I'm Sasha Alsberg, and I wrote Zenith with my co-author, Lindsay Cummings. Lindsay would be here today, but she actually gave birth to a little baby last week named Zion, and he's so cute that he just went home. So Lindsay and I partnered up on this project about 3 years ago when I was going to Emerson College in Boston, Massachusetts, where we are now, and just down the road, actually. And Lindsay messaged me one day saying, "Hey, Sasha, do you want to write a book together? I know you're going to school for creative writing, and I think it'll be a great thing to do." And I'm like, "Sure, why not? I'll try my hand at it." So we ended up coming up with the idea of, okay, we want to write about pirates, but the real story is, you know, whether we put them in space or put them on the ocean in a fantasy novel. So, of course, with us not knowing which direction to go in, we decided to go to Twitter, and we put out a poll and asked you guys, what do you want us to write, a science fiction novel or a fantasy novel? And when the votes came in, 30% of you guys said science fiction, and 70% said fantasy. So of course we went with what you guys didn't want, and we went with a science fiction novel. So that's really how the origin story of Zenith came about, and we originally self-published this book online, 60-page novella, back in June of 2016. And, you know, we didn't think much of it. We're like, we love this story, we love these characters, and we just wanted to get out a product to our audience as soon as possible. So we put it out online for $1.99, and people seem to have liked it because the next week I was in California in line at Universal Studios, and I get a call from my agent, and I get so scared. I'm like, oh my gosh, what did I do wrong? Did somebody hack an account? I don't know. And I answer the phone, and she said, "Hey, Sasha, I have some really good news." I'm like, okay, good, I'm not in trouble. You guys hit number one on the New York Times list, which was something that we never expected to happen, but there we are. It did, and me being a very naive person at the time about the book industry, I never really thought much about the New York Times list. It was just like this thing that, you know, my parents would read about in the New York Times newspaper, and, you know, I would move on with my life. So when that happened, it kind of flipped everything upside down in the best way possible, and then we got picked up by our publisher, Harlequin Teen, a few months later after we went on submission with the full book, and it came out a year and a half later into this product, what it is today. Nice hardcover, and the paperback is now available to buy. But it was a really incredible journey because I started off as a booktuber, and I'm still a booktuber today, you know, I always thought about, you know, talking about books on that line, never talking about my own books. And so Lindsay and I created the story, which is pretty much about female friendships and how female friendships and books don't always have to be catty. They can become like family, and they can be empowering and loving and so powerful. And so it's about this gang of female space pirates, you know, going across the galaxy, stealing things, doing lots of illegal activity. But one day, the government catches them, and instead of throwing them into jail, the government enlists them into going on a rescue mission. But it's not an easy rescue mission, and it kind of goes awry, and then they have to kind of save the galaxy. And it's a really fun book. You know, Lindsay and I poured our heart and soul into it. It's been an incredible journey. I never thought that I would be a writer. I never thought I didn't ever believe in myself enough to be a writer. I was always very scared about putting my work out there. But once I did, it truly was like the best experience of my life, and I'm really grateful to call it my job. Like, that's kind of crazy. So yeah, that's my little origin story.
Great. Well, it's interesting. So I sent these folks some questions I was going to ask. Actually, I sent they're agents or some kind of middle people in between you all. So I only just learned that Tilly received the questions. I don't know if anyone...
I did.
Oh, you did. Okay, it was kind of...
I forgot what they were. That,
I received them, but I didn't read them.
Well, it's interesting because a lot of your answers or your descriptions of your books seem to have anticipated the questions, whether intentional or not. And one of my first questions was the big one and probably went closest to the theme of space. You know, space seems to be really rich with metaphor and metaphoric potential as a setting, particularly in a young adult novel. And I was wondering if you could speak a little bit about space as a setting. All of you all have said pretty... not adamantly, but have distinguished the writing that you're doing or that you're talking about from hard sci-fi or from genre. So what's up with the space? Why space?
I usually like to explain why space in the sense that I have done so much research on space. I always wanted to be an astronomer, but then I learned that I suck at math, and you kind of have to be good at math being an astronomer. But that didn't, you know, make me not want to follow that path in some type of the way. So I used to do research and study up on astronomy, and I would have documents upon documents just full of just really cool aspects of space, but I had nowhere to put it. But then when Lindsay and I wrote Zenith, I had all these, you know, theories that I could make into fact in a fantasy world, which is the science fiction world that we created. And I think that we picked space because you can, like I said, make theory into fact and create these amazing worlds that also replicate our own in different ways. Like, you could still have, like, these governing systems that are very similar to our own world, but kind of put them in a way in your own books to kind of be like, you know, yeah, there's lots of crap going down in this world, just as there is in our world, and this is how you kind of maintain it. Because sometimes people don't want to go to the news because they're scared of it. But if you kind of get them a broken down edition into your own book and kind of show them what the future could be, or, you know, how could you change the world, you know, it kind of opens up the conversation to them. And they're like, you know what, it's not as scary. Or, you know, it's just, it's a world that we are kind of familiar with, but still very distant from. And it's a very interesting thing to play around with. And I know myself, you know, it has been so much fun to take space, which is an actual thing, kind of mold it to my own creation, pitch it to my co-author, and she'll tell me if it's good or not. And some of the times it's not that great, but that's why you have a partner in crime to kind of weed through all the bad ideas to get to the good ones. So, you know, that's why I create Write in Space, because it is similar, but also different enough.
Yeah, I think there's something to me, I don't know anything about space. I consistently got very poor grades in science class. I was asleep for a lot of it. I was a figure skater, so I was a little tired. And I like that in my head it's just an abyss. It's just this confusing, endless ocean. And because I'm a graphic novelist, a lot of this is very much about the visual language for me. And the way that they move through space, it's as if they're walking through water, which is just fun to draw. And I, you know, a big component of On a Sunbeam is that Mia is in school. And her school is this big boarding school that is just floating, like, and it's not a ship, it's just a building, and throughout the entire book there's just buildings just kind of hanging out. And I think that's because when I was in school it was really like, it was like I was just floating through darkness. And space just sort of gives me the option to play with that and to disconnect, to disconnect things, the fact that our buildings and our lives don't have to be tethered to gravity, that we can just sort of float through it.
It's a safe space when people usually are scared of it. It's a very interesting dynamic that you have there.
And yeah, it's very cozy, because like they're constantly, like, there's fireplaces and blankets and pillows and trees, because I demand comfort at all times.
I also have a really weird side note that we have a connection with. I was also a competitive figure skater, so we need to talk about this later.
Yeah, we need to talk. I wonder if I competed against you.
Oh my gosh, were you ever in Illinois?
No.
So probably not.
But I've competed in Boston, so I wasn't sure.
Okay.
I have a really weird... I've been to Illinois.
Are you... Okay, I was like, are you a figure skater too?
So, I get really obsessed with certain things, and the things that I get obsessed with, I always pop up in my books. When I knew that Amy was going to moderate this panel, I wore this because I'm obsessed with this band, and so is Amy, and so I thought, we've got this connection. I'm also obsessed with the German Impressionist painter Max Beckmann, and I wrote a book about him that's coming out next year. And I'm completely obsessed with the American poet Wallace Stevens. Mm-hmm. And Stevens is such a strange person, and I don't profess to be an expert on poetry. It's entirely my own interpretations, but he wrote this poem called Anecdote of the Jar, a very short poem. And it's about, and it's in it, Stevens is kind of musing about how he takes this empty jar and he puts it out in the woods in Tennessee. And there's this man-made thing that's like completely empty, and it's surrounded with all this wilderness. And the wilderness kind of succumbs to this just stupid little empty jar. And that really became like the motivating factor about this book, because I was looking at this empty jar that these kids are trapped in, these human beings, and they're surrounded by all this endless, infinite wilderness of space. And yet, human beings, being the cat claw removing species that we are, just always tend to try to make everything submit to them in nature. And we produce these empty machines that kind of eat us alive. And so that's where the space thing came in. I just looked at it as, you know, the wilderness that we haven't ruined yet by putting human-made machines out there. But we'll get there. We'll get there quickly. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, so I think Sasha's already kind of answered this question in, you know, the description of space and your interest in space. Would you all ever go to space? Like, if you had a chance to, say, spend some time on the International Space Station, would you do it?
I mean, it's getting underfunded currently, but before it, you know, disappears, I would love to. I love space. If you, like, asked me to go into space tomorrow, I would pack my bags. Actually, you probably can't pack any bags, so I would just, like, take my little self over to Florida, hop on a flight, and go up there. I feel like it's so untouched. It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely I would go. Of course.
What do you think it smells like? The International Space Station probably smells terrible.
Really?
Body odor.
You can't open a window.
Yeah.
It's like years of farts.
Yeah. Oh, stop. I hope that there's a ventilation system for that.
I don't go anywhere if there's not a bar and a restaurant. I'm sorry. There's no way.
Smuggle some alcohol in there.
No way. And the whole toilet thing just freaks me out.
Yeah.
Well, it'd be another graphic novel, like, oh, we went to space, what happened?
Yeah. Nothing.
It smelled gross.
It smelled terrible.
And that's it. It's like a 5-page graphic novel. I went back after
a day.
I'd
get a huge advance for it.
I know. Like, you should do it.
Well, I guess I was just wondering, you know, when... I think, Sasha, you're sort of distinct here in your positive apperception of space. And you all wrote about, you know, it's inevitable decline, it's inevitable destruction by humans, or perhaps its metaphoric potential as this empty space through which, you know, maybe you, as a lonely single person, or maybe as a person with a group of friends or in a building, just sort of travel through. And I didn't know if you thought about space in a real way. Mm-hmm. What would that mean for you all?
I don't know if I would know how. Mm-hmm. I think it would demand research and time and like care to really understand it. And I honestly don't know if I'd have the patience for it.
Currently, just like in general, in the next 20-some years, we're going to be able to go up into space if you have a lot of money. And I think that's an interesting prospect because... the people we are putting up into space currently are scientists. They're going up there to learn and to broaden our understanding of this universe that we have only just slightly touched. And it's kind of scary to think that sooner than we think, our airspace above us in space, which is untouchable besides a few satellites, well, a lot of satellites, you know, will be up for anybody's taking. And then it begs to, you know, for you to question, what is untouchable? And what is really within your grasp, and what can you do with it? And, you know, a lot of people will take that into consideration when it comes to, like, weaponizing things or, you know, territorialism and all that stuff. You know, there's lots of things to consider, and it's scary, and it has to be in the right person's hands. Mm-hmm. And I think that, like, you know, if you put hotels up in space, who will go up there? Like, not scientists who should be up there, but, you know, just really rich people who want to take an actual selfie up there.
And that's what I'm most... concerned about, because mm-hmm. it's just another extension of mm-hmm. imperialism and colonialism. I am so over Elon Musk, And
SpaceX.
You know, and like, you know, when you say that, you know, the rich people are going to be able to go up there, mm-hmm. that's, you know, that's I mean, that's like the Native Americans yeah. going, yay, Columbus, come on, yeah. visit us. Yeah, I think that we just need to be just so much more careful. Mm-hmm. And we should throw people in jail who send sports cars up into space, you know?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, and it's like also, you know, when we are going to look at space, we have to do it right. Because it's so easy to do it wrong. And it's like, you know, one step for man. But, like, you know, that step could be a stumble. And then it could just be a downward spiral from there. And it's so important to get it right and put the right people up there. But, you know, with the very rich people like Elon Musk, you know, that can be really catastrophic to our advancement as a race and as, like, you know, as humans in general, you know? So I have a lot of thoughts on this. I might write a book on it.
Well, I think this. So I'm gonna push it a little bit, maybe a little too far metaphorically. So go with me. And if this doesn't sound,
bring it on.
All right. So if space has the potential to be sort of a metaphoric setting that has particular import for young adult literature. That is a space of potential freedom, a space of colonialism or imperialism, a space of loneliness, a space of distance. Could maybe your, or a space of fraternity and sorority, I can't think of the gender neutral term, I apologize, a space of opposition, could maybe your ideas about when I posit, would you actually go to space? Is that a metaphoric question? Would you actually be an adolescent again? And when you think about, would you actually be an adolescent? Not knowing what you know now, but I mean full on memory wipe, back to age 12, back to age 13 or whatever. Would you do it? And then from there, how does that idea figure into your writing for young people? So it's kind of a three-step. Think about how you envision the metaphor of space. Think about it as a possible metaphor for adolescence or your view of adolescence. Does that view jive with your own idea of yourself as a future adolescent, if we had the brain wipe, or a past adolescent? And what does that mean for your writing for young people?
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Yeah.
Well, I was an adolescent so long ago, but I would be an adolescent again if I could be an adolescent when I was an adolescent. Because, again, with that idea of space and the limitlessness, the lack of constraint, I really felt like that was present in my childhood and when I was growing up. Because I was always given the message in school that you can be anything that you want to be. And now I feel like kids, I've been a teacher for 26 years, and I still keep going back, a high school teacher in the same classroom. And what I'm seeing now is that the narrative that kids are being fed is that they've got to groom themselves for the jobs of the future, and it's becoming more and more constrained. They don't really have the space that I had when I was a child. And so, I would go back and do it again, even not knowing what I know now. And being that clumsy but free and wild person that I was.
Well, and would you say that your writing depicts that possibility, the clumsiness and the wildness?
Absolutely, I think so.
So perhaps, okay, this is leading, and I'm wondering if other people feel the same. So perhaps maybe your writing kind of is invested in constructing an alternative to adolescence as you see it being problematically formed?
Well, I hope that kids can see through the maze walls that they're being kind of guided into. I hope that they can see beyond that, and I hope that maybe they can get some of that from what I write. That they don't have to be a rabbit or a robot. That they could be whatever they want to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would not want to be 12 again. Not in a million years. It was miserable and. I relish that I am an adult now with control and power. And even though I think if I went back, I could exist as a 12-year-old with a little more gusto, I wouldn't want to be in that situation, and I do think that defines a lot of the work I do, because when I sit down to draw every day, it's a chance to live another life, and it's a chance to relive my own life in a new and safer way. So drawing gives me that chance to go back, so I would never want to actually do it, because I have drawing.
Yeah, I think that a big aspect of Zenith, at least, it's about redemption, and how far can you go into the opposite direction of what is deemed good, and how quickly can you go back and kind of redo yourself and grow as a person, even though you've reached the point of almost no return. Because there are space pirates, and they do a lot of killing. And I kind of, like, can think about that a lot with, childhood. And, like, you know, when you're younger, you can do a lot of, like, negative things. And not all of them are bad, but, like, you learn from them, and you can grow. And when I am writing, that's what I kind of pull from. Like, what are little things that I grew up doing, or not even me, but my friends or, you know, people that I heard of, that they've jumped back from? And it's about that. It's about teaching people that you're not irredeemable. You do still have a chance. Unless you murder somebody. I mean, she does murder people. I mean, you can take whatever you want from that. But pretty much, you know, I feel like there's lots of lessons to be learned from that. And I kind of agree with both of your guys' aspects of that.
Well, we've talked a little bit around this other space, so I'm going to shift our focus to a different space that we've all sort of mentioned, and that is virtual space.
Is this where you ask us about social media?
Yes. So, as YA authors, you participate in virtual space. So, Sasha, you describe yourself as a digital influencer. You talk books and reading on YouTube and kind of depict that on Instagram. Tilly, you create and you share your art and your webcomics online. Andrew, you share your book covers and cat pictures on Instagram. And all of you participate in Twitter to various degrees. So how does this engagement shape or reflect your work as authors or artists?
It reflects my work in a very specific way in that I don't do my own social media anymore, and I haven't, and no one knows that. So if I said thank you to you on Twitter, it wasn't me, but thank you.
Details.
I do appreciate it. Yeah, I haven't read a notification in, I don't know, a year?
Who does it?
Some top secret information. It's my mom. No, I'm serious. It's my mom. She's great at it. She loves it. She's like, Tilly, this person said the nicest thing to you today. And it's like, Mom, I don't want to know. I don't have to engage with it. It's absolutely lovely. Because you have to have a presence now. You have to promote your work, especially since my work is so visual. Sharing those visuals is very important, but I find it very draining. Even the positive stuff. Mm-hmm. It's just hard because it's I'm one person and it's like 20,000 other people sort of coming back at me, and that is very unbalanced. And taking graphic novels takes a really goddamn long time. I have one in my backpack that I was working on earlier in the author hospitality suite, and I want to focus on my work. I want to focus on the world around me, and so I need to, like, push it away. So my answer is, like, get it away from me. And luckily I have a mom who used to work in television and is very savvy and likes it a lot more than me.
I'm so ashamed of myself because this book is just entirely about Twitter, and
there's no shame in that. Huh. It's something you needed to talk about.
I know, but I don't really feel like I've really purged myself of social media. But yeah, I do. I mean, like, I put pictures of my cats and my horses and my other animals on my social media, and I don't post about my wife and my children. And I've been married for 24 years now, but I don't really post too much about them. But the only chance that they get to know what I'm doing in my life, I guess, is if they read my feeds, because I'm gone so much, which is kind of sad. But I'm going home today.
I'm so jealous.
You guys know that new update on the iPhone that shares how much screen time you've been on your phone for? Well, that's been the bane of my existence, because it shows me how much of an issue I actually do have with social media and how much I'm on it. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, the other day, I posted on my Instagram stories, okay, I'm going offline today, I'll see you guys tomorrow. But was I ever offline? No, I was still, like, you know, checking the feeds and, like, reading people's tweets and Instagrams.
It's an addiction.
It's an addiction. Completely. And, part of my job is social influencing. I don't know how much I feel about that word. I just like to be like, yeah, you guys are my friends. I'm talking to you on the internet about various subjects. But the thing is, you are influencing people, and there's a really great responsibility that comes with that. You need to make sure whatever you put out on social media is something that is gonna hopefully reflect positively, unless you're talking about some difficult subjects, then you need to make sure you're informed on those. And, you know, there's a lot of responsibility that comes with having a large audience. I have 210,000 followers on Instagram. That is a large number of people. And once you stop seeing those as individual people and people with brains, that's when you start negatively influencing them, in a sense, because you need to make sure that you make a positive impact on these people, because people look up to you when you're online. But then there also is a side of social media that's extremely negative, especially currently in our day and age, and especially in the past year. There's been lots of gossip channels arising for YouTube influencers and, you know, talking about all the drama online, and that's completely fine. It's fine to have criticism. It's fine to have get bad reviews. It's fine to do all that stuff. But it's also, social media leads to a direct avenue to the person that you're talking about in a negative way, and that can seriously affect them. And that's when you need to take a step back and, you know, kind of close off channels. Like, I closed off Goodreads completely because I'm like, that's not a place that I want to be as an author.
Solid.
Yeah, and people will, like, literally fight you against that. They're like, oh, you need to go read that stuff. It's like, I don't read it, but my friends read it, and they tell me some good positive criticisms, so I don't have to read the negative, the really harsh negative ones. And it's okay to filter. It's okay to kind of have a wall up, because as long as you filter in things that will help you grow as a person, that's what's important, and grow as a writer and grow as an influencer or whatnot. But, you know, social media, I love it to death, a little bit too much, but there's definitely lots of positive and negatives about it, and I hope that I can kind of get a handle on how much I'm actually on it, because I am using it way too much. Like, my screen time one day was like 5 hours.
Wow.
Yeah, and it is a job at the end of the day that I do, but that is way too much. You're not doing your job for 5 hours a day on social media, and that's too much. That is on a weekend, so you know, I'm just on my phone. But it's an insane thing, and I could talk forever on it, so I'm going to end now. But social media, it's a great thing, but also a kind of negative one as well.
I was surprised that when I stopped being on it, how many little pockets of time I sort of rediscovered for myself. I mean, even just like going to the bathroom. I know y'all bring your phone to the bathroom. Don't lie to me. And like, you know, the dentist waiting room, and when I wake up and when I fall asleep, and just my days got longer.
Yeah.
They really got longer. Mm-hmm. And I never want to go back. Mm-hmm. It feels so precious to have that time.
And see the world around you.
Yeah.
You tend to like see the world around you through a computer screen or a phone camera or something. You need to take a step back, take a breather, and see the world for in the present, not always to capture the moments for Instagram.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, folks, it is time to open up the discussion to the audience. All right, audience, if you do have a question, it would be great if you would raise your hand, but if you would also wait until a person comes to you with a microphone so that you'll have a chance to say your question in the microphone, and everyone will be able to hear you. So if anybody has a question you'd like to pose to these folks, please, hand raise.
Yay, we're not scary.
I do a lot of school visits, and at high schools, I feel very comfortable being like, I'm going to call on you, but this isn't a school, so I don't know if I can demand that.
Oh, here's one.
It's coming to you.
Wait, is this? Okay. Hi. I guess I have a question mostly for Tilly, but I haven't read your other work, so I'm sorry. This could apply to everyone. But I'm just kind of curious how you feel about, like, I know in your comic there's a lot of like queer characters and queer representation. Like, mm-hmm. How do you feel like the space is opening up, like, for like younger queer authors, I guess? Mm-hmm. Because I know you were saying earlier that like you feel like the world is kind of closing in terms of like occupations for young people, but I feel like there is kind of a market for like this new sort of representation in art especially. So I was just kind of curious if you had any thoughts.
Yeah, I do. I think it's changing, and it's changing very fast. And my frustration with how it's changing is that I feel like a lot of people who write reviews and people who think and talk about books are still, and publishers in general, are very focused on the content of the book and not of who the creator is. Because to me, it does not matter at all what is going on in that book. It matters to me who is making it, because that is true diversity. And if you are in a minority and you're making something, that is an act of advocacy. And so I feel like what needs to happen now is there just needs to be even more of a push to get especially queer people just to make things. And I know the doors are opening up. I know there's a way, there's just a lot more opportunities right now, but it feels like I still just want to see more. And I do, I think it's a good time to be like young and queer and making something. And it's a good time to be young and queer and meet someone else and tell them to make something too and to pass it along, you know? Good
cool.
question.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And thank you for being the brave person to ask the first question.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone want to follow this first person's lead?
Ooh,
a hand was up.
Over here.
So this is more of a technical question. I was wondering, you said you wrote Zenith with another author. Mm-hmm. I was wondering how that worked. Did you guys, like, were you on, like, the same Google Doc? Or?
Mm-hmm. So it's actually a very interesting process because Zenith was a very different process in writing than it was for the second book, Nexus. And then again, you know, the way you write books will always be different no matter what book it is and what's going on in your life at the time or how much time you have. So I'm going to just talk about Zenith for right now. So Lindsay and I, we opened up a Google Docs and we started just purging information into it. And then we wrote on top of each other's writing. So one of us would start off a chapter, the other one would filter in our own words into what they already wrote, and then we would write some more of our own, and then the other author would write on top of that. And that's how we really melded our writings together, and that's how we really got to understand each character as our own, because we share these characters in the first book. The second book, well, I'm going to talk about the same book anyways. The second book, we did kind of the same process, but we first split it up in chunks. So in the first chunk, we both took like two characters and wrote those separately. And then we switched characters midway through, and then we started adding each other's writing in and interweaving them and just adding stuff into it. And that may sound really confusing because it really is. It's a jumbled mess, but at the end of the day, it gets the book written and it gets it written well. Every single co-author is gonna be different. Your process is gonna be different. The way you do it, everything is gonna be completely different. If I co-wrote with somebody else, it'll probably be a very different process, but I think that Google Docs is a great collaborative kind of like, a place to go when you are working on a book with a person. Or I know some authors write chapters and then send them off to each other and then write the next chapter, and they kind of, it's like this back and forth process. Yes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Lindsay and I, we write on top of each other's writing. That's the best way to explain our process. It works for us. It might not work for everybody, but it's a really fun thing. And if you're writing a book with somebody, it's both your book babies, so you have to share in the love for it.
Mm-hmm. There's a question up here.
Up here. And in there.
Oh, great.
We won't forget about you, don't worry.
No.
Sorry, I didn't mean to steal your question. I was wondering, so you guys, like, talked about this a little bit, but, and I think, like, that the concept that you were bringing up about sort of safe spaces and a, kind of an alternative adolescence is, like, really interesting because I would not want to be an adolescent again, but I think that, like, there's a lot of really crucial stories that, like, for adolescents that are so beautiful and incredible, and so I was wondering kind of, like, in either, like, going back to, like, what you really valued about your childhood or, like, what you wish you had, like, what are some of, like, the high-key, like, really important points that you try to either highlight in your work or just, like, have, I guess?
Mm. I think a lot about the power of an amazing teacher or like a figure in your life who is not your parent, because I think often some of the most mind-blowing moments of your childhood and some of your biggest inspirations have to be someone outside of your family because they're not your family. And it's a role I'm constantly putting in books, just like that adult who takes an interest in a kid and takes a chance on them and gives them time is just so special. So that's what I think about.
In thinking about it, a big reason why I said that I would like to revisit adolescence again is I had an absolutely terrible childhood. I mean, like, horrible, horrible things happened to me. And I think that one of the things that's consistent, this is my 11th novel for young adults, and I think one of the things that's consistent in my writing is this examination of the fact of how when you are young, you tend to universalize your experience in such a way that you think everybody is going through exactly the same thing you are until you have an opportunity to get outside your house and interact with people that go beyond, you know, the group of human beings that you were born to. And so, yeah, that's a big reason why I would like to go back, because I'd like to experience that again, that hopefully a more positive universalization of my experience, but then also that, you know, the whole end of the world scenario of when you break out of adolescence and the world really does come to an end, when you can objectively take a step away from your childhood and look back at it and make some pretty stark determinations about the processes that you endured and how you got to where you are.
When does that happen?
I'm waiting still.
I grew up right in the middle of the young adult boom. I am 21 now, so, you know, I had Divergent, I had Hunger Games, I had all those amazing books. But something that I was lacking when I was reading all those books was realistic experiences that we all experience in our lives, some more than others. I lost my mom when I was 15. And I really wish there was a book out there that accurately depicted a parental death, because a lot of the time in the books I was reading, the parents were killed off just because it was convenient. And I wish there was more books like that when I was growing up as a kid that kind of showed either a healthy household, just a normal household, really a strong and empowering female friendships, and that's why I wrote about that in my book, and just things that you need to see more of, because at that time, they were all about like the love triangles, which I love, you know. You know, you gotta love those things and those tropes, because tropes are great, but I wish there were other realistic aspects in the books I was reading that could have been touched upon a little bit more deeper, that could help me learn and grow as a person instead of having to stumble my way through it, which was fine. It's fine to stumble, it's fine to grow, and fine to, like, you know, just weave your own path, but it's really nice to kind of see yourself in books. And, you know, I think that right now in our day and age, a lot of people are getting to see themselves in books and their own experiences, and I think that this, like, community has been so broadened upon, and it's been really positive for adolescents nowadays. So, yeah.
Great. There was a person over this here person who had their hand up. Oh, are you still ready? Great.
I was just wondering, like, what books do you guys read usually, like, for fun? And, like, what do you guys read in your, like, teenage years?
Great question. I will take that first, because I really want to tell you about what I'm reading right now. I didn't read as a teenager. I had a lot of trouble reading, so I really just didn't read. I read the Spark Notes for the books I was supposed to read in school, and I think I read the first page of The Great Gatsby, but that was about as far as I made it. And now I have since rediscovered reading, and one of my favorite authors, possibly my favorite, Tana French, just published a new book.
I'm reading. It's in my purse
right now.
Don't tell
me. Don't tell me anything. I haven't started
I'm
yet.
I'm like on page 60.
Okay. She's an Irish mystery writer, and I love her books, and they're very inspiring to me.
What's her name?
Tana French. T-A-N-A French.
It's like an adult French author.
Okay. But anyone can read Tana French,
yeah,
right?
Oh.
I mean, there's murder, but come on. So that's my answer.
I'm going to write that down right now.
Yeah. When I was a teenager, I used to go to the book. We used to actually have bookstores, like competing bookstores, when I was a kid. And I'm looking to see if there's anyone who's as old as I am in the audience. You might remember, like, B. Dalton and Borders and Pickwick. And I used to go to bookstores, and I'd go and I'd buy Penguin Classics, because I could get like a cheap paperback, and I'd buy the thickest ones I could find, because I was always looking for like getting the most reading for my money. So I'm serious. So like when I was like 15, I'd buy like I read Dostoevsky's The Idiot, and because it was like, you know, this thick, and it was like $2 or something. And that's how I picked my books. I read Thomas Hardy, Melville, Dostoevsky. I just buy the thickest ones. I love to read. And the only books for young readers that I read, I usually read advances for blurbs that come from publishers, things like that. Mm-hmm. I love reading. And I just finished I'm late to the game on this one, but I just last week on a plane, and I tweeted the author, and I think he tweeted me back. I don't know, it might have been your mom. But
possible.
Yeah, but I read the recent Pulitzer Prize winner, Less, and by Andrew Sean Greer. Oh, man, just such brilliant writing and such a compact little adult book. I just got chills just thinking about how I wish I could have the experience of reading that book again and how kind of like how postpartum-y I felt when when I was finished with the book.
When I was growing up, I grew up reading books just after the Twilight craze because
did
I
you
never
read Twilight?
No.
Oh my God, it was
I
so
know.
Good though.
I tried reading it when I was on my way to Forks to do an event there. I don't know why they invited me. I'm like, I've never read these books. I've seen the movies. I told them that, and they're like,
why
no, you're the new
me?
Wave of fans. And I'm like,
I'm such a big fan.
I know. Well, like we owe Twilight to like young adult. Young adult was started because of Twilight and like a few other books, of course, but like that really jump-started it, and it's hard to deny that. But I grew up with like Mortal Instruments and still reading it till this day. Thank you, Sandra Clare, for having so many books. And then like Divergent, Hunger Games. I'm blanking out all the books, but like those staple young adult books that were happening in 2008 through 2013. Those are like what helped form me into the person I am today. And then I read a book called Outlander, and if you know me, you know how much I love Outlander by Diana Gabaldon. It's a time travel Scottish mythological, amazing historical novel, and I love it so much, and it helped inspire the book I'm currently writing. And I love writing, I love reading, just very fantastical and fairy-like and very Celtic-oriented just novels. So right now I'm reading this book called The Lost Queen, which is Camelot meets Outlander, and it's so good. Oh my gosh, it's about it's about these twins, and the twin brother, he inspired the legend of Merlin, and then the twin sister, she is the lost queen of Scotland, and it's so fascinating. I highly recommend it. It's so good. Yeah, I can recommend books all the time. I have a YouTube channel where I do it every single week.
Way back there, too.
Yeah. All right, so just one caveat. I got the high sign that says we only have 3 minutes left. You think...
We'll answer efficiently.
Yes. Person with the hand up back there?
Project.
Oh, wait, where are you?
Oh, yeah, we want to be able to hear them. For sure.
Oh, you had a question, too.
Oh, dear.
In the plaid.
Okay, so first I have a comment. You, Sasha, were talking about wanting more realistic dealing with like parent deaths. If you've ever read A Monster Calls by Patrick Ness, perfect for that. Perfect.
I haven't read it. I should
also,
because I know that.
The Lost by, I can't remember her name. Sarah Beth Durst, I think.
Ooh.
Okay, but
thank
my
you.
Question. You're talking about ways in which you'd like to sort of change or deepen the YA genre. Are there specific ways the rest of you would like to see that genre change?
I just want to see more money going to people who are not straight white men. That's about it. I just want people to get paid for once. It's because there are people making phenomenal books out there, but they're not the ones making the most money.
And so. Not getting the marketing too.
Yeah, they're not going to get the
books,
marketing
yeah.
or the resources. So that's what I want to see.
I want to see better writing.
I mean, I would say exactly what you just said. It's just, diversifying the genre even more because we still have a lot of steps to go and take. So, yeah.
Great. All right. Do you think, person with the plaid shirt, quick one?
And that little one.
Oh, and then person with the headband, quick one? All right. Person with the microphone, where are you?
We're making you work for it.
Can you tell us about your pets?
Oh, pets.
Sorry, I love my dogs.
Name and type.
Okay.
Quickly.
I have two Australian Shepherds, Fraser and Fiona. You can follow them on their Instagram account, Fraser and Fiona. They're adorable and they're so sassy. And Fraser just is like a teenage boy. She's like a teenage girl, more like really sassy. And then like Fiona, she's completely a ditz, and I love her.
I have two Australian Shepherds.
No way.
Bowie, because his eyes are different colors. And Glory O'Brien, named after one
photos.
Of my favorite characters, written by one of my favorite authors, A.S. King's Glory O'Brien's History of the Future. I have two horses, I have 13 chickens, I have two cats, and my son has a lizard.
Wow.
Cloudy, a gray, tiny Scottish Fold cat, but she passed away recently, and I am still grieving. But she is forever loved in my heart.
That reminds me. I was on tour. I've been on tour for like 2.5 weeks, and one of my media handlers at one of my stops, she handed me a card, and she says, I also involved in this nonprofit that rescues old, elderly senior citizen dogs and rehomes them. And I thought, oh, that's really nice. She goes, yeah, that picture on the card is actually my dog. You're sitting on her. And I go, what? She goes, yeah, her ashes are under the passenger seat in my car. I carry her with me everywhere.
No.
Wait, let's get...
All right, person with the headband.
Do you write down your ideas immediately, or you just, like, wait until you have a bunch of ideas and then write them all down at the same time?
That's a really good question. I try to write them down immediately. I try to make sure I always have like a pen and a little notebook with me, because the thing is, and I'm sure you've experienced this, you have a really good idea and then you go do something else and you're like, oh my God, wait, what was that idea? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you have a great dream and then you forget it. So I try and write it down quickly. Mm-hmm.
I think about them for about a year before I write them down. No, I'm serious. For about a whole year, and then I start to write them down just one at a time. But I obsess, so.
If I'm too tired and don't have a pen or paper next to me, I don't want to turn on my phone, I yell to my roommate in the room over, tell her to remember it and write it down for me. So immediately. It's really bad.
That's good. I like that.
Thank you. My roommate hates it.
All right, folks. I am afraid that this panel has come to a close. Thank you all so much for coming, and thank you all to the authors for participating. Now, if you all will remember just a few instructions, these folks are going to go outside and set up for a signing. If you don't mind staying in your seats, maybe, or just staying in your area and stretching or doing whatever until they get themselves ready, and then it'll be time to get into a nice line to talk to them. So thank you all very much.